Welcome to the special edition number 2 of Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. And this is going to go toe-to-toe, blow-to-blow, because when he walked in, he said, Bobby, I'm going to start out by hitting you in the throat. So, ding, the bell is rang. Let's go at it.
But you're not going to introduce me?
They know who you are. Ladies and gentlemen, excuse me for just pitiful protocol. We have with us today, once again, Mr. Jason Whitlock from Fox Sports. Speak for yourself.
Bob, good to be here. Happy Wednesday. Look, man, I don't think you got me figured out. I don't think you got me figured out. And again, you're a grown man. Obviously, I'm a grown man. But my requests are very simple. They really are. And I pay for all my requests. I don't ask without doing. I don't ask favors. I don't do charity with friends. I give friends opportunities. I do charity amongst strangers. Because, you know, you give friends charity and then you start judging how they do it and you get all upset. And so people I consider a friend and respect, I give them opportunities. This is an opportunity. I had a request. I needed you to go see the movie Get Out. You didn't do it. And I'm one of these funny people, man. That just, like, in order to do this, to take advantage of this opportunity fully, there's a few little things I need you to do. Go see a movie that I'm saying I'll reimburse you for. If you were broke, you could have called me. I would give it to you up front. Bought you popcorn and the whole nine, just so we could have the full discussion on that. But
That's the real. And I don't have an excuse, and you probably won't settle for this explanation.
No, I won't.
So we just go ahead and what I'll do is make a mental note because I got, you know, broadsided legitimately the week before that. We're not going to make a habit out of this because, first of all, you have damn near zero tolerance.
Okay? No, I have none for grown people. I got a lot of tolerance for young people and people are old and can't take care of themselves.
Right.
I'll put up with damn near anything.
Right.
But if I offer somebody an opportunity and they don't run with it, I'm gonna go offer the opportunity someplace else.
Well, I just hope I ain't out of opportunities. But in the event that it's been nice knowing you.
It's been nice. It's been nice.
Oh Lord, have mercy, man.
Did you see the thing I did? No,
because yes, I did
with Kaepernick on the Get Out movie. That's why I wanted. That's why I wanted you to see the movie so you could understand my complete and entire perspective on this movie, Get Out. It's not for black people. It's poison. It's a young dude trying to work out his identity issues. The same as Colin Kaepernick. What we're seeing from Colin Kaepernick, you know, every day they putting out a release. Kaepernick gave $50,000 to Somalia for hunger relief. Kaepernick gave money to Meals on Wheels. They got Kaepernick wide open. They running a train right now on his bank account. Wide open. Running a train on his bank account. He's trying to buy his way back into the NFL because he let a group of idiots talk him into doing some really dumb stuff that had no real impact other than drew a bunch of attention on Kaepernick and caused a bunch of ratings for debate talk shows to pop when they talked about Kaepernick. But it accomplished nothing. It was a gesture. And this gesture that he made has now got this dude on his knees begging, Massa, I won't take no knee no more. Let me back in. And all the people that sat on the sidelines applauding this dumb stuff he was doing during the season, see if they'll give him a
job. Won't get him a happy meal. But, you know, I did listen to a broadcast you did back in September where you talked about the cyber world.
Yeah.
And what you said, as usual, cannot be refuted in terms of the truth of it. Now, how people take the truth is always a different matter. All right. Just like how you just came at me. I can't say anything about that other than you got a point that's well grounded, okay? I'm not the guy that's going to argue with the truth. I can either try to get better or just accept that that's the price I paid for the mistake that I made. Now, with that being said, when I listen to that thing that you talked about, the damage that's been done through Twitter and that whole notion that it has transformed into something that's counterproductive to interaction between human beings in a real way.
No question about it, but I made this analogy to you, I think, in one of our private conversations, just like Twitter is smallpox in blankets.
That went over big, man. It really did.
And, oh, did I say that on here?
Last week.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I
said, man, see, you can visualize that. One of the things that you do extremely well is use words to paint pictures and tell stories. And that stuck with me when you said that, because I knew what happened with smallpox and blankets. People were destroyed.
Thought, hey, these blankets are going to keep us warm in the winter. Keep, you know, wow, this is great. And it was actually killing them. We have been convinced that Twitter is our salvation. We're the only group of people on the planet. There's black Twitter. There is no Italian Twitter. There's no Asian Twitter. There's no white Twitter. We think black Twitter, and this is something special for us. And the establishment media hired reporters to cover black Twitter because they want to see they want to document our assisted suicide. This is
you go again. That's another. You coined a very telling phrase. Yeah. Assisted suicide.
They're documenting. This is Dr. Jack Kevorkian prescribing us Twitter, because what you have from Colin Kaepernick to all of these elite, assimilated, confused, celebrity Negroes, they're performing for Twitter. They're not being themselves. They're trying to demonstrate their blackness through tweets. See, blackness has been reduced to tweets. Blackness has been reduced to how does what you do play on Twitter? And that's why so much dumb stuff, illogical stuff, that's why we talk so disrespectfully to each other via Twitter, via anything. The N-word and coon and saying this back and forth to each other, somehow we think, if we say these things about each other, that makes us blacker.
It's worse than that, Jason, because of my relationship with you. See, you're in the front car of the coon train. They done put me back in the caboose already, and I could literally care less because my circle has gotten so small now, I'm doing addition by subtraction. And it's three things. You fall in either one of three categories. You're a friend of mine, you're neutral, or you're a foe. And that's based on what you have done in my life and for my life. So all that other stuff, and it helped to have that conversation the first time you was on the show when you talked about how you are able to manage misperceptions just by knowing who you are. And then in my case, I'm just going through a checklist. Who has helped me? Who has shown me the value in me if I do certain things? And then there's the rest of the people who pat you on the back because they're looking for a soft spot to stab me. Okay, so I'm learning how to distinguish between those groups of people.
Well, again, I think if you look at Colin Kaepernick, and I have some sympathy for him, he's mixed race, never knew his daddy, mama gave him up for adoption, adopted by white people, good people, brought him into their home. But I could see how that would create an identity issue for him. And so he's lurching around trying to, how can I be black? If I get a big afro, if I wear cornrows, if I get all tatted up, if I join Cap Alpha Psi when I'm in college, and now to, if I support Black Lives Matter, if I take a knee, do these gestures, do these things make me black? Rather than just owning who he is. He's a mixed race child raised by white people with some athletic ability, and screw whoever doesn't like me. He needs them kind of balls rather than let me take some actions that will get me retweeted and likes on Instagram and all this social media stuff, because it's a game that's been rigged up, man, by, again, Twitter. The whole social media world is centered basically in San Francisco. And that was the other thing that I talked about either here or on my television show or on a podcast with Colin Cowherd, is just that the media is now dancing to the tune of San Francisco. And Twitter is controlled by San Francisco values. And as African Americans, we haven't done nearly enough evaluation of who are we really catering to? Who are we really trying to please with the actions we're taking over social media and the actions we take in our lives? Because, again, and again, I don't want to disparage San Francisco. I've been there, visited. It's a great city. But San Francisco is not reflective of my values. San Francisco is very revolutionary, very secular, very far, far left. And I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in a little inner city neighborhood church. I'm just not far, far left. And most Black people are not. We right here in the heart of South Central Los Angeles. This is, as much as people, there's like a whole mischaracterization of South Central and urban America. It's not far left.
That's so true.
It's far right. Again, Bob, if you really listen to the message and what rappers are actually saying, if you get past the N-word, if you get past them shooting and killing each other and dealing dope, their message is very conservative. It's very dog eat dog. It's very Dr. Dre in his last on the Compton album talked about I ain't feeling sorry for nobody. Get a, you don't know where I came from. You don't know how hard I make it. I ain't got no sympathy for you. Total right wing message. And if you listen, and I'm not talking about Republican, I'm just talking about conservative. Take care of yourself. South Central Los Angeles, Indianapolis, Indiana. Where I started out, where my father's bar was, where my father lived, it's a very conservative, take care of yourself. Don't be going around asking your neighbor or somebody else for charity. It's about getting out and doing for you. And so you have a lot of these assimilated and elite Negroes in the media and on television who have no real connection to South Central Los Angeles, no real connection to the inner city of Indianapolis. They're just speculating on what some distant family members told them about the inner city. And they see the inner city as far left because they never spent any time here. And so they say, yeah, liberalism and these far-left politics, that's the solution for everything. That's not the solution here. Because the people here in South Central and Indianapolis, they're not really looking for charity. There's some homeless people walking the streets that got a sign up and a handout. But the people that actually live here, they're not begging. They're trying to go get. And people don't understand that. And that we're falling for the okey-doke that from San Francisco and their control of social media, Twitter, Facebook, and all that other stuff, they're baiting Black people. Oh, you're left wing and you're liberal and all these far left values and all these gestures and things like, this is what the perfect Negro does. And it's not us. It's not us. And again, none of what I'm saying has to do with me campaigning for any politician. I don't vote. I don't participate in politics. I'm not suggesting that for anybody else, but I'm not a politician. I'm just talking factually about who we are and where the majority of us come from.
What's interesting, Jason, about your summation is I get practically everything in concert with what you said, with one exception. One unique thing about black people is our humanity. Even underneath that, I got to go out there and get it.
Yeah.
We have a sensibility. We used to have one where if somebody was trying to get it, you would give them that opportunity, but it wouldn't be in the form of, like you say, charity. It would be emphatically clear. Look, I don't want to hear no excuses. You better make the best of this because this is not a gravy train.
Right.
Okay. And that gets lost sometimes in these labels of conservative and liberal, because I've seen people who vote a certain way. There's a man that lived right up the street here named Mr. Leon Gar. He'll be 103 tomorrow. And the first book I wrote, Let's Go to Work, he told me, he said, Bobby, if you want to make money, you got to make friends. Now, he's been a Republican since the 20s.
Yep.
And the reason he told me he was a Republican, he said, Bobby, I need my money. I'd rather get it and do what I want to do with it. And what he did was he empowered people with it.
Yes.
He owns just blocks around here, right?
Well.
And he done held on to his stuff. He said, Bobby, it ain't yours till you pay for it. But don't nobody want to hear that nowadays. You know, it's get rich or die trying. And the problem with that is you may get something, but can you keep it? Is the next question, especially if you
pivoted
with a false
off of
narrative.
Something, though. I thought you was about to make a point about humanity.
That's in the midst of that.
But were you about to suggest that right wing or conservative has less humanity than left and liberal?
No, I don't even distinguish between the two of them because it's right or wrong when you just take all of the skin off. There are people who are good people and people that are bad people. And if you get out that they're Republican, they get mislabeled. If you get out that they're liberal because of the things that they do with what they have. I know people that, in terms of their politics, they would be considered liberal. And then I know people with their politics, in terms of how they voted, they're Republican. But in terms of their humanity, and I'm talking about black people, all right? I know some people who've been voting Republican for a long time because they got enough money that it matters to them how their money is distributed.
But again, I think if you, and again, I'm trying to avoid politics, but I'm trying to explain why, as black people, we shouldn't just run from the label of conservative. Because again, if you look at our living situation and how we operate and what conservative really means in terms of, so if someone, concern, and I know you didn't make this argument, but it's like, oh, liberals, they're more humane.
I wasn't going
there. I know you're not, but I'm saying some people hear it and think. No, because part of my conservative values are, the way I was brought up, is I take damn good care of my family. And that's a conservative value. Take care of your own. Whoever created you, whatever you helped create, you damn sure better take care of it.
Let's get a consensus on what you mean by conservative, because that means different things to different people.
Listen, and I may go too big picture here, but it's an analogy I think people will understand. There's a battle going on between conservatives and liberals. How much should the government help? How much should you do on your own?
Mm-hmm.
And what I reduce that down to is conservatives believe, no, you know, at the end of the day, this is really, whatever you see in the jungle with animals, that's basically all this is. We just put some buildings up and laid some asphalt down. It's a jungle.
Right.
And there's
right.
a human nature of survival,
yeah.
And there's a human nature of to eat the weak. That's a human nature, because people want to get ahead. You eat the weak. And liberals like, yeah, it's a jungle. We want to turn it into a zoo. No, seriously. And we're going to decide how much everybody gets to eat. We're going to hand it out fairly. And it sounds good on paper. But again, let's take me. I started out in a little 400 square foot apartment with me and my mother and brother after my parents divorced in the hood. And if the liberals have their zoo, I'm in a cage and there's only so far I can go. They've set up a system. Oh, you get to eat this much. You get this much, blah, blah, blah. And there's these elite zookeepers that get to decide all this. And I'm like, no, 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 no. Let me up out. I want to operate in the jungle. I'm built for this. And I'm going to go out and hunt and eat enough that I'm going to go back and grab my mama. I'm going to go back and grab some cousins. I'm going to go back and I'm going to, here's the way, folks. Here's the way. I'm building a little something out here. We're going to run this patch of land in the jungle and it's going to be ours. Mm. I don't want to be in no cage. And trust me, Ice Cube and Dr. Dre and whoever else is claiming South Central, they don't want to be in no cage either. And you don't, Jim Brown didn't want to be in no cage. He don't want a zoo. Because at the end of the day, man's nature is to be a lion or a wolf at the top of the food chain. And so, I believe in some safeguards in the jungle. But again, as you look where we're headed, they're trying to create a damn zoo, man. Where
not trying. We have seen the cages, passing by daily. Right here in South Central, and as it ties back to the difference between charity and change, you have beautifully illustrated the difference already in using Kaepernick as an example. All right, he might as well set some of that money on fire that he has
given away trying to buy his way into the NFL. You made the point when we were talking. He's feeding the hungry in Somalia, and God bless him.
Yeah.
But if he stepped outside his door
in Oakland, 15 minutes. 15 minutes, he'd have seen kind of poverty, man. Kind of poverty, right. And so it all goes back to, I was having a conversation, I don't know if you heard it.
And so but I'll just say this. And so with the people in Oakland, in San Francisco, I wouldn't give them charity. I would be trying to figure out ways how to give them opportunities. I would send some charity off to Somalia.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be down in San Francisco and Oakland trying to figure out how can I give these people that are hurting opportunities.
Teach them how to eat.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the old parable. You know, you give a man a fish, he eats for the day. You teach him how to fish, he eats for a lifetime. Before you got here, I don't know if you know who this cat is, David Banner.
Yeah. The rapper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you the difference between David Banner and some of these other people that I've mentioned to you that have been real quick to malign you and that kind of thing.
David Banner's maligned me?
No.
Oh,
that's what I was getting ready to say, man.
Okay,
Let me finish the sentence, man. You're a journalist. Let me get to the period. That wasn't no comma. You ran right through the stop sign. With that being said, when Jim went to see Donald Trump, as he got elected, the roof caved in. All of the zookeepers, as you refer to them, just attacked Jim viciously, man. And Jim got mad at me. We've had that conversation before. He said, Bobby, you don't need to defend me because I'm not worried about that stuff. I'm not defending you or Jim. I'm defending me. Because if they attack people and put a message out there that I know is counterproductive, I can't allow that to just go unheard because there's some people just don't know no better because that's all they've heard. And that's how they're controlling the message now out of San Francisco. We're just getting one side of the story. With that being said, David called me after all of the stuff came out about Jim going up there and kissing Trump's ass and all that kind of foolishness. And he said, Bobby, I know you and Jim are real close, man. Before I say anything, I want to know why did Jim go to the White House? Not whether he should go or not, but why? Now, the rest of them people never asked that question. They went off the optics of it, not knowing that Jim did what any taxpaying citizen would want to do. How you going to spend my money is why he went to meet with Trump.
Yep.
Okay. That never got, you never saw that in print. Jim up there bootlicking and cooning and all that kind of stuff. Because that's the message that they are able to elevate and continue to sell books and DVDs and false hope.
And that message about Jim, again, plays very well over Twitter. It will get retweeted and liked, and it will seem like the most popular thing. And so a message gets sent out there. Oh, man, if you want to be popular, bash Jim. Call him an Uncle Tom. Bash Trump. Call him all kinds of names. That'll get retweeted and popular. And again, when I say this, Twitter is headquartered in San Francisco. Facebook headquartered in the Bay Area, Northern California. Again, the people running it are manipulating things to reflect their far left values and to demonize people who disagree with their far left values. And again, I don't know Jim's politics. I think he said he was a Hillary Clinton supporter, voter. Mm-hmm. But AmeriCan, that's a conservative principle about teaching men how to take care of themselves, how to fend for themselves, how to think in a way that leads them to a way they can lift their own selves up. It's not a charity organization. Mm-mm. And so, again, when I say San Francisco values, as opposed to the media used to cater to New York values, traditional liberal
all of my life
values. Yeah. Now it's catering to San Francisco because they're in control of Facebook and Twitter, and that the all the media now wants retweets and they want to be shared virally. And so everything is being published in a way and told through a perspective that is pleasing to Twitter and Facebook. And the people running Twitter and Facebook are far, far left. They're revolutionaries that are borderline communists. Again, if you understand San Francisco, it's a different dynamic and culture than New York. And so, again, there's a game being played on the entire media. I think it's being played most acutely on black people. We are being fed a steady message that's counterproductive for us, that's disingenuous about us, that's misleading and taking us down a path. Again, I said this in my commentary about what I feel about the far, far left. I'm not talking about traditional New York liberalism. I'm talking about the far, far left thing. It leads black men unemployed, on their knees, begging. That's it's charity. It's about getting down on your knees and, oh, Mr. White man, please come save us because we're powerless as black people to do anything about it ourselves. We are totally dependent on the government and magical white people to save us.
Magical white people. See, this is a bad optic, Jason, because it looks like complete capitulation.
Capitulation to what?
See, I people know I talk all the time. And I've sit here for 30 minutes because I can't debate with anything that you said because it's too foundational, all right? And I agree with much of it simply because the truth is just the truth to stand on its own. As it relates to Kaepernick, and I mentioned David Banner, for example, and the difference. David knows who he is in such a way that I don't always agree with some of the things that he say. But one thing I love about David Banner is he's fair-minded, okay? Because we talked a few minutes ago, right? And I said, man, I might need security after this show I do today, man. He said, what's up? I said, man, I got Jason Whitlock back in the studio. You done had Jason on your show? You know, how he get out? See, he asked the right question. He didn't go by what the perception of you is. He said, how did he get out? I said, man, he been with AmeriCan for 10 years, man. He said, I'm like, yeah, and because the look on your face when I mentioned David Banner, you're like, David Banner came with me? No, because he thinks for himself. And that's why these labels sometimes get in the way, because people really don't know people like they think they know them, man.
No, people don't know people at all because, again, most of our perception of people right now is being driven by social media, and people are being misled. But, again, just take Jim Brown as a tremendous example. If Jim Brown wanted to be the first billionaire black athlete, could have done it. He's right out here in Hollywood, good-looking guy in his prime, retires from the NFL. The world is his oyster. He had choices he could make. The same deal that they offered to OJ, and I'm speaking metaphorically,
you sure are.
Analogy, but the same deal they offered OJ, mm-hmm. they offered to Jim. Hey, Jim, play the game this way, avoid politics. Man, we gonna have you swimming with every beautiful white woman you want, every dollar you can, every movie you can be in, Raquel Welch, it's all on the table for you, Jim. And Jim was like, well, look, I can get Raquel on my own. One, I don't need you. And two, I got a different game plan I'm trying to execute, and I'm not going to abandon my people and my beliefs to sell out for the money. And I want to say this. If you watch the O.J. documentary, and I don't even think how we got here, but if you watch the O.J. documentary, I think O.J. made rational choices. Really. Because what O.J.'s mindset at the time, when they show you him, Hollywood coming at him after his college career and how they wanted to play it, what O.J. was thinking was, I'm going to make as much money and take care of Marguerite and my kids, and I'm going to leave this all to my – all he was concerned about was his wife, his kids. He had a very narrow focus. He didn't see the big picture. I'm not going to knock a guy for not seeing the big picture, coming out of the hood in San Francisco, disconnected from his father. Father, at that time, living an alternative lifestyle that O.J. was uncomfortable with, and O.J. felt shame about. O.J. And so O.J. was like, I'm going to take this money. I'm going to stay out of politics. Jim had a higher understanding of his life purpose than O.J. And so Jim made a completely different decision.
Hold on right there, please. You're referring too much to the movie about O.J. and not the real O.J. Part of what you said is true and evidentiary. The other part of it is complete bullshit. O.J. has always been a selfish person who has demonstrated disloyalty to the people who have been loyal to him.
Now, I think you've made a great point. Here's all I'm going to say. I'm not excusing it. But again, if you had grown up the way O.J. did, again, when the relationship with
that's an excuse.
It's an excuse, but it's also a truth. Again, it's hard for me to judge a man until I put on his boots and start wondering, well, damn, how would that have affected me?
But you do judge people, and in some cases, rightfully so. Right is right, and wrong is wrong. What I know about Jason Whitlock is some things you just not going to do for money or anything else.
And you can credit Jimmy Whitlock and Joyce Whitlock for that.
I can't say that about O.J.
I understand that because, one, he was disconnected from his father, and his father was, you know, living a lifestyle.
But he survived that. See, at some point when you get past all of that, if you hold on to those conditionings, that's your fault.
Bob, if you sitting here today acting like you ain't holding on to some shit that happened to you when you was 5 or 6 years old, you lying.
And I'm still lying. I'm trying to shake it, though.
Well, I understand.
I'm conscious of it.
Right.
O.J. acted like it didn't matter.
Well, let me give you another example of what happens that's different for you and O.J., different for me and O.J. O.J. had millions of dollars rained on him at a young age. And the best and brightest women that he could have, he had so many distractions just thrown on top of him at age 20, 21, 22. On top of the issue. And again, it sounds like I'm making a bunch
of
excuses.
You really are.
But it's just factual, Bob.
No, it's not.
Because
Barry Sanders had the same
dealing
situation.
Dealing with total different personality. Barry's a bit
point.
Of an introvert.
But more importantly, Barry Sanders didn't get caught up in it. I've seen people get caught up in that money shit, Jason.
I know.
You
listen,
see what I mean?
Listen, you're putting me in a bad position because it sounds like I'm defending O.J., and I'm really not. Oh, you know, O.J. can kiss my ass. Well, you know,
he called me problems, right, man. They think I killed Nicole.
Right, but so it sounds like I'm defending O.J., but I'm not. I'm just defending his situation. I'm really trying to make a point about Jim is people don't understand the sacrifices Jim has made to stay true
To himself,
but also to black folks.
But that's the same thing if you look at the world that way. And that's one of the reasons, as you said on a number of occasions, why we have some commonality, is that I admire that trait, that you can get to a point where you know yourself well enough that you become fortified against all the perceptions, misperceptions, all that shit that can, you know, really mess a person up.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because nobody wants to be disliked, but some people deal with it better than others. OJ got caught up in, the money did not remove that stain that you're talking about, but it also didn't cover up that basic flaw. You don't betray the people that take care of you. I looked at his mother during that trial, where clothes he bought her back in 1968, while he had enriched his new world. You see what I mean? Every Brown got enriched by his success. I don't begrudge him that, but the people he shouldn't have never let fall off like that. OJ had a chance to save his mother's house, man, and he didn't do it, man. The church had to fry fish and stuff to keep that woman in the house because he's a selfish son of a bitch.
Bob, I'm in no dispute with you about that. There are reasons why. We're all born into this world relatively well, you know, mentally, and things, factors start shaping us and changing us, and we go down different paths. If OJ had been raised by Joyce and Jimmy Whitlock, we wouldn't be talking about this. He wouldn't be sitting in jail right now. Mm. OJ was brought up in a different situation in San Francisco. Again, not that I want, you know, San Francisco is really biblical. If people really went and understood, it's really biblical. Oh, and I'm not, it's a biblical place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the center to me of a lot of the chaos that we're seeing right now in America. It's being driven. They want revolution. Again, San Francisco is what created and supported Black Lives Matter.
Well, on that note, I have to say this for just factual purposes. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And it's called the responsibility of self-determination. That's why Jim does need to be edified in certain ways, because he shared that with the world, what he went through and how he became a person that could take care of himself, not walk around with an attitude and blaming other people for what he does or does not have. All right. Antoine Fisher had every reason to be just as despicable as OJ. He was born in prison. His mother killed his father. So fuck that shit OJ had to deal with. This man was born in prison. And he made up his own mind that I am not going to repeat this shit if I get out of this cage that you was talking about earlier.
And I applaud him. That's very hard to do what he did. But he needs to be thanking God every day. I don't think it's analogous to what you're saying about OJ.
Why not?
You know, you could put your phone on vibrate.
Man, I just got this yesterday, man. I ain't figured out to do nothing with it.
How about turn it off?
I tried to, man. It wouldn't cut out, man. You see, you're right about these devices. Yeah, cut it off for me, man.
Yeah.
See, soon I got the thing, it had 30 applications on it. All I wanted to do was answer the goddamn phone. I'm sick of these things, man. They done took over, you know, a portion of my head that hurts all the time, man. You know. So why you had it, take the apps off. See, there you go. It's on. I think it's over there, man.
I got it. Anyway, yeah. Continue.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, we all at some point, they call it the age of enlightenment. And people mask that very well, okay? And they get away with, you know, leading people in the wrong direction as a result of that. Because they'll promote being one thing when actually that ain't who they are, man. And if it don't come out in the wash, it's going to come out in the rinse.
Yeah. Now, and again, I think the point you just made or where I will connect to it is just Twitter is that place where everybody's posturing. Everybody's posing. Everybody's trying to convince somebody, here's who I am. I'm this perfect person that thinks all these perfect thoughts. I stand for everything that's right, and I hate everything that's bad. That's some phony BS. There are no perfect people. No one thinks perfectly all the time. People make mistakes. Twitter is headquarters for the zoo. It's where all the zookeepers get together and try to decide who gets to eat what and who gets to do this, who actually has freedom of speech, who doesn't. And it's all being if you're not super assimilated and elite or some kind of celebrity, you really don't have a voice with these millennials and young people and people that think they are the guardians of the race and our culture, who really, again, just like the Jordan Peele guy that I talked about last week, this dude is so confused. He done made a movie about hating white people and having a white girlfriend when he's married to a white woman. How could you be any more conflicted than that? I'm going to put a movie out. I'm half black, half white. I'm married to a white woman. I'm going to make a movie about why you should hate white people. And
when
how
it's
evil
actually
white
a
people.
Contradiction of how you roll every day, which takes me here. We talked about this going to get back.
And Negroes are celebrating.
This is going to get back to Kaepernick, because anytime your name pops up, his does too. All right. So he'll hear about this particular show. Now, what I would ask you that I hope he hears is, what would you say if you had a chance to just sit down with the, you know, no cameras and nothing like that? What would you tell them about how to make better decisions at this point, based on where he is right now?
I would tell Cap, and I would say this. This is me and him talking. This isn't for public consumption.
Yeah.
So I don't want people to hear it like I'm saying it publicly. Mm-hmm. But I would be like, Cap, man, I think you need some help, man. I think you need to sit down with a therapist. You're dealing with some real issues as related to your racial identity. And you need to get comfortable with who you are and what your background is. Because you were raised by white folks. You're very assimilated. You need to get comfortable with that.
I'm halfway there with you. He shouldn't go see a therapist. He should sit in an American circle because it transcends race,
that's therapy.
Gender.
Yeah. Therapy. Right.
Because I reached out to him after all that stuff first broke.
Yep.
And Jim gets pissed at me when I do that kind of stuff, right? But I have to do that because I did it. I tried to do that with Pac-Man Jones several years ago, right? Came this close. Jim was in Nashville with me, right? And that was before the trade went down when he went to Dallas. And we were supposed to meet with him in dinner. Jerry Jones sent a plane to pick him up because he had talked to Jim on the phone a couple of times. And you could tell, man, that he was really there. A certain part of him was like, man, I know I really need to talk to you, man. Not about football, but about life. And because he didn't get that situation, he went to Dallas, and Jerry Jones put him with Michael Irvin and a couple other people. That was like, you know, the Fox Garden, the chicken coop. And the rest of it is history. You know, his lawyers get all of his money right now. I know his lawyer in Nashville, the one that called us and said, hey, man, please come in and help this young brother. You know, because Jim do a lot of stuff like that off the radar anyway. But having said that, I think a conversation like that with somebody is necessary, therapist or not, they would just tell him, look, first thing you need to do is go somewhere, because right now you ain't got that many options, okay? So take advantage of the fact that there's several teams that you can start for if you got ready to play football, which means you got to approach it differently or you're going to end up Vince Young.
Well, listen. See, you're already thinking about football. I'm thinking about he needs to get himself together before he'll ever be the football player that he once was or ever reach his potential.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, the ideal situation for Kaepernick, he needs to sit down for a year, figure out who he is, and come back to the NFL next year. Mm. This man's a vegan right now and weighs about 180. You know, he's much thinner than, if you watched him this past year,
he was down about 25 pounds.
Yeah, much thinner than he was previously. He's a vegan. His body can't play football the way that it used to play football. And he's not a pocket passer. So, again, the first thing he has to figure out is, does he really want to play football? Is he a football player? And the first step in that process, to me, is figuring out, who am I? And let's get comfortable with that. Let's get comfortable with, I was raised in the suburbs in Wisconsin by a great white family.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get 100% comfortable with that And that way I can tell these Negroes that may tease me, that may say, oh, you don't talk black enough, you don't dance the right way, you don't, whatever. I can tell, go kiss my ass. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up that way. This is the way that I am. This is the kind of black I am. And if you don't like it, go somewhere.
Really? But
then you can start, once you have that confidence, then you can start dealing with people and be a leader. Kaepernick was never any kind of great leader when he was even the starting quarterback. The players on the team didn't connect with him. He's so uncomfortable with himself, he can't be comfortable with other people. Mm. So to me, when you talk about quarterback and the leadership position and all that, it starts there. And I'm listening to all these people run their mouth. And I mean former players that don't know a damn thing, really, because there's guys that just play the game. They don't know it. And then I'm looking at all this media that's never really covered the game, that certainly don't understand it, don't understand what that locker room environment is really like. It's a jungle. And Kaepernick is a little sheep or, giraffe or something. Mm-hmm. Going into the Lions Den with some Ray Lewis and them, he ain't ready for that at the quarterback position to be a leader over the long haul. And so he my biggest concern with this dude, because anytime they got you cutting this many checks and you be telling everybody, I cut a check to somebody, cut a check to Meals on Wheels. My bank account's open. I'm going to show you how I spend this $1 million. I'm like, man, you lost. There's nobody as a grown man, other than my accountant, nobody gets involved in my finances. My mama don't, my brother don't, my sister don't, nobody. Whoever I'm dealing with as a one, don't get it. That's mine. I control this. They running a train on this man. They running a train on him. Mm. And people are looking around, Spike Lee, and all these people come caping up for him. Instead of telling this man the truth, instead of looking, get these looters.
Mm. Damn, we done went from
out of my life.
Looters, wow.
Damn. People that have no business. The Sean King guy over Twitter, the little popular white dude, mm-hmm. is pretending to be black, yeah. over Twitter. Mm-hmm. Man, they've written so many stories about the charities he's ripped off. And that's Kaepernick's running mate. Now, I mean, again, he's trying to get back into the NFL. And I'm listening to people talk about, oh, the NFL should bring him on board, and he's being blackballed. Kaepernick is blackballing himself. Sean King, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
He writes for the New York Daily News,
right,
or something.
Right, that's it.
Wrote that shit about Peyton Manning. Remember, that's the guy that stirred all that stuff about Peyton Manning. Right. Sean King pictured with him all over Twitter, and stories written about them running around together and doing things together. So how do you think, if you're an NFL person, and you say, hold on, man, you running with Sean King, who wrote this shit about Peyton Manning,
which
who's
was true.
An icon.
Yeah, it was true, though.
None of the shit. Bob, this is crazy. I don't want to get off on a distraction, okay, but hell no, because I actually did the journalism on that. Mm-hmm. It's some BS. You just talking BS.
I went to the University of Tennessee.
Well, that's great.
I know about that school.
That's great. Listen.
I know the culture there.
Right. Fine.
Yeah. But let's go on back to your point.
Okay, Bob, what did you do when you was 18, 19? You was just the perfect.
I didn't moon nobody.
Oh, you didn't moon either. All right, Bob, get the hell out of here. I mean, seriously. We're going to hold Jim to a different standard than Peyton. Because everybody litigating whatever's going on in Jim's life from way far away, that's how you're going to do Peyton Manning.
The difference is that you can't overlook there is a ongoing racial component. And we don't get to challenge a Peyton
ongoing
Manning.
Racial component. Peyton Manning allegedly did this to some white woman. That is, by all reports, if you the people that also there, certifiable.
She was freaky deaky.
Not just freaky, unstable.
Mm-hmm. That don't mean that
it doesn't justify it. I'm not trying to justify.
As long as we're on that page.
But again, to come back 30 years later and I was mooned and now I'm still devastated, and let me reach back in Peyton's pocket. Come on, man. Mm.
Come all right. on. I get so, that part.
But bottom line, regardless, let's say whatever, let's say it's all true. But if you an NFL GM, NFL owner, mm-hmm. how do you think they feel about Peyton Manning?
They're gonna protect the golden goose.
Who made them a ton of money, exactly. and they looking for the next Peyton Manning.
That's business.
And you the man, you riding with the man that just tried to take Peyton Manning out. And you want to come into our locker room with him as your best friend or a friend of yours to let him unleash whatever narrative he wants about what we got going on here.
That's not going to happen.
And so, again, we got there's a train being run on this guy's bank account and on him mentally. You got looters next to him. Oh, God, the NFL's racist and Kaepernick, I'm your best friend. When you're the exact person who's keeping him out of the NFL, and if you were looking for him, you would be distancing yourself from him, and you'd be telling him, man, you can't get back in the NFL with me running shotgun with you. See, if they was really looking out for him and had his best interest, because, again, I've been lit up because I keep criticizing the man because, one, I'm trying to tell the man how to get your money and how to take care of yourself and how to be a man and not running around hoping Twitter can justify your manhood and your blackness. Mm. I'm trying to put the guy on a path to independence and getting his money right. And I tried to tell him at the time, this kneeling down stuff is going to cost you money and have you out here begging, I ain't going to protest no more, Mr. White folks. Because is that not what he's doing?
And nobody wants to admit that we're there now. We are right there because, as you just suggested, those checks have been written and it's charity. The poverty is going to continue in Somalia and the killing is going to continue in the Bay Area. And all of those things because the check he wrote to the NAACP, he might as well drink or smoke that up. But that's just my opinion about that. With that being said, Kaepernick and that whole issue around it, as you connected to the new West Coast media phenomenon, how do we deal with that, Jason, and what small ways that we can deal with that?
The number one thing I think we as black people need to do is be explaining to other black people that Twitter is smallpox in a blanket. It is not for us. It's a game that's being run on us. Twitter is dangerous. And again, I'm on Twitter. People say, why don't you get off Twitter? I'm on Twitter because I'm trying to tell people this. I'm trying to show people this stuff here is crazy and not in our best interest.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's funny that we're having this kind of, I met a guy, his name is David Ortner. I met him at Trader Joe's about 2 months ago. And he came up to me and he said, I want to bless you. I thought he was, you know, kind of strange, right? I said, what do you mean you want to bless me, man? And cause he's a typical looking white guy, right? And he said, look, man, whatever you buying in here today, I'm going to pay for it. I said, man, look, man, this is 2017, man. It's a lot of crazy stuff going on. What do you want? He said, man, I'm just driven to do this. And he stood at the counter. And he paid for my groceries, man. And I was like, here's where I'm going with that. First, I thought he was just odd. Then when he came at me with the religious piece of it, I'm like, man, Eddie Long just robbed the community and everything. And I'm kind of, you know, I'm nervous about this religion thing. I'm spiritual. We got past that. He was a Republican. But we got past all of that because it was his humanity. And it's important that you're saying what you're saying, because the truth of the matter is we keep drawing all of these racial lines. First of all, they're not going to hold up. They're not sustainable because it goes against the fact that we all got one thing in common. We're born to die. And if you get that confused with your color and all of this stuff that you ain't going to stand by no longer than till the T-shirt fade, then you have destroyed any opportunity to advance not only yourself in a way that makes life worth living. Because you already know, Jason, money don't fix everything.
No.
It makes life comfortable in terms of a physical way, but I know too many people that's got money, man, and I wouldn't trade places with them for nothing in the world.
Miserable.
For nothing in the world. So this hour done went by so fast. You want to? You got some other stuff you want to deal with, or you want to stick with the hour? It's up to you.
I think I'm good, man.
Okay. So in the final 5 minutes, Jason, yeah. I want to let people that see this show, and it spiked, you know, people want to hear what you got to say, man. And some of them are quiet about it, and they'll never admit that once they finally heard you in a different setting where you got to really just, you know, open up on why you speak the way that you do, you ain't going to hear much from them. Cause I didn't get the typical feedback I thought I was going to get for having you on the show, because the truth is overwhelming like that sometimes when it's unfiltered. And I say that because you coming in here, it's not ceremonial. People don't really know that you came up in a real city that was, like you said, a black piece of Indianapolis, right?
So, no, 100%. But again, for those of us from the Midwest inner city, mm-hmm. we come here and we don't even recognize this. Y'all got houses and stuff in Allaire's Bass neighborhood.
Yeah. I ain't from LA now. You know that, man. Yeah, but y'all, you know, shit.
We had projects.
Real projects. Yeah.
You know, this stuff, y'all got palm trees in the ghetto.
I got here for you, DJ. Let me tell you something, man. When they took me over to Jordan Down, I thought that was Beverly Hills, man. Y'all got to be kidding me. There ain't no goddamn projects, man. Shit. Two stories? That ain't no project, man. That looked like a condo to me. You know what I mean?
And again, I don't want to make, because again, I don't want to make too much of mine, but again, I know where I started. By the grace of God, I had a mother. Once she was divorced, it was like, you know what? We're going to get y'all to a working class neighborhood so you got a shot. Because I was a bad kid. And if I had stayed where I was at, I would probably be locked up somewhere.
You still got them tendencies, man.
But, you know, third, fourth grade, we moved to a working class neighborhood. But my father never left the hood. The bar never left the hood. I never mentally, emotionally, or physically really left the hood, just because my father's bar was my favorite place on the planet. The Masterpiece Lounge, I've talked about it for years. I took anybody and everybody from the head coach of Indiana University basketball to any of my friends in the media, Bob Ryan, and
from the Boston Globe.
From the Boston Globe, I took them all to the Masterpiece. When the Final Four comes to Indianapolis, I get all the media to come to the Masterpiece Lounge, feed them barbecue.
See, that's recycling black dollars, man.
Yeah.
See, that's why I really done ran out of time and patience for folks that talk black and spend white. You see, because you come in here enriches this community, whether you realize it or not. And I know that you do. Okay.
No, it's not though. I'm here, to be quite honest with you, because again, I want to have a conversation with you because I want to have a conversation with black people. And so you got to go where they are. And you got to go where we are to have that conversation. And to be honest with you, it's the only place where you can have this conversation. I live on Wilshire. You can't have this conversation on Wilshire.
Yeah, because they're going to stop me on the way over.
Not
there.
Not just that, but it just don't.
No, that's a problem.
Right,
there,
but it just don't play.
Yeah.
And so here I can have the conversation that I want to have with black people and hopefully have it be understood. You know, because again, I South Central has been glamorized is the wrong word, but celebrated in a way that
it's inaccurate.
Yeah, it really is. Cuz again, this to me, when I come here, it feels like Indianapolis. It feels like the Masterpiece Lounge. I mean, this whole
area. Well, take
area.
Some pictures, because in 2 years, unless we are successful at what we are doing broadly, half the people that are here will not be here.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's that important, man. And it's important to me that you have stepped across that line, and not really, because that's just who you really are, all right? You ain't get out of here looking all crazy and stuff, because it ain't what folks think it is, man. You know what I mean? You're just glad we got that gate out there. You know what I mean? So, you know, it goes like that, man. And so in closing, I'd like to acknowledge some people that going to help make this show what I want it to be and become a demonstration of us helping each other. Bowers and Sons Cleaners, man. They'll come get your clothes, man.
Is that right?
They've been in business for 67 years, just like your mom and pops and them. They them kind of people, man. And they are good folks, and they doing a lot. They over here on Central Avenue, man, and they'll come and get your clothes. Bowers and Son, clean, good people, man. And then Dr. Romeo Brooks, when you said that a vegan it got to be weak, nah.
I didn't say it got to be weak.
Well, you said that it was because Maurice Maurice Lucas was a vegan. You couldn't tell it.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
He's probably a vegetarian, no, not a vegan.
He passed away. Yeah, he was a vegetarian. And he kept that frame. Bill Walton, you know, he broke all the way down, man. Yeah. But that's why he named that boy after him, man. That boy was a killer. And he didn't eat no meat, man.
Huh.
So he needed to talk to whoever was his dietitian and get that weight back up, because it's the NFL, man.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? And you need that extra 25, especially when you ain't out there well prepared, you know, because they're going to come get you, man. You know what I mean?
You can't do blitz pickup.
Oh, Lord, it gets ugly, man. It gets ugly. So, Jason, man, I just want to thank you for letting me be myself. And it's going to go where it go. It's going to do what it do.
Well, let me say this, Bob. We not talking again until after you see Get Out. Don't call me. Don't look for me until after you see Get Out.
I'm going to do that today then, man. You ain't going to dismiss me like that, because you done gave me a fair warning.
No, don't call me again.
I'm going to call you tonight after I go see the damn movie.
All right.
Yeah. See, you warned me fairly.
Huh?
I'm going to hold you to that. I ain't going to call you till I go see the movie.
Yeah, I know. Well, trust me, I'm not going to answer.
Okay, we're done and done, man. Thank you, Jason, for stopping by Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. Man, we out of here.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.